transportation, my room, and my board. So, you know, I went there absolutely without any conflicts of interest or encumbrances. You know, but it's like nothing happened at that dinner. Nothing happened at that dinner. Michael Flynn has his own issues going on with Russia. You know, I can say that for my own part, that picture circulates without a single fact. I was there with a number of peace advocates who, you know, unfortunately, we have to turn to Russian TV and to Democracy Now!, but there are very few TV stations that cover peace candidates. I was there with Rocky Anderson and Ray McGovern.
The mayor of Salt Lake City.
Yes.
So we're going to do part two of this discussion, and we're going to post online at democracynow.org. Jill Stein, the 2016 presidential nominee for the Green Party, just came back from South Korea. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Our website's democracynow.org. Special thanks to Mike Burke, Tina Gester, Nermin Che, Carla Wells, Laura Gottesdiener.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Business of Diversity on August 7th at 11 a.m. at the Sentinel Hotel in Portland. The Business of Diversity will be a conversation about the impact of diversity on the economy and business in Oregon. This panel discussion features business owners, educators, and community leaders. Again, that's the Business of Diversity on August 7th at 11 a.m. at the Sentinel Hotel, 614 Southwest 11th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Have you seen KBOO's Fuzzy Boo Van? It's a giant furry blue Muppet mobile that brings music and joy wherever it's found in Portland and across the region. We're having a contest this summer. If you spot the van, post a picture on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter with the hashtag FuzzyBoo and you'll be entered to win a chance to have FuzzyBoo at your event, as well as other prizes. Each picture you take is another chance to win. For more info and clues on where to find the van, go to kboo.fm/FuzzyBoo.
This is KBOO Portland. The time now is 8:01. This KBO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Grendel's, a neighborhood coffee house offering locally roasted coffee, sandwiches for breakfast and lunch, and Wi-Fi. Proud to support KBOO, Grendel's is open every day at East Burnside and 8th. Information at 503-595-9550 or facebook.com/Grendel's Coffee House.
Good morning, good morning, good morning. My name is Abe Proctor. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show on KBOO 90.7 FM, your community-supported radio station. It's just me today. Joe was unable to join us. And also unable to join us, along with Joe today, was the topic that Joe and I had decided to talk about. A little look behind the scenes here about how the sausage is made at the Abe and Joe Show. This is really not very interesting, so I'll make it brief. You know, basically a few days before the show, you know, sometimes as much as a week before the next show, one of us will phone the other and we'll toss out some ideas. Usually the first few of those are vetoed, and then we arrive on something we go forward with. This week, Joe was the driving force behind our topic, but he's unable to be here. So that topic has gone by the wayside. So into that intellectual and radio vacuum steps yours truly with something to make a show out of. Now, what I've decided to talk about today is something that's been on my mind for a long time, and something I think that usually turns into a pretty good conversation on that radio program. Usually when we address large questions, big picture topics. Usually that takes us to a pretty interesting place. Sometimes it leaves us wandering in the weeds, but I'm hoping that doesn't happen today. What I want to talk about today is where we go from here. And I want to lay down a few parameters for this conversation and a few stipulations about the conversation before we really get into it. I think that this president, Donald J. Trump, will not last through his first term. I think somehow, either through resignation or impeachment, he will not last out his first term. And we, the Republic, will be left with, first of all, the wreckage from the damage he's already done. And this is something we went into on this program a couple of weeks ago in some fairly deep detail. We'll also be left with a crazy white ring Christian president in Mike Pence. And I say that with anticipation and gratitude because, you know, as crazy and as right wing and as Christian and as fundamentalist as Mike Pence might be, he's not Donald Trump. He's more of a garden variety sort of ridiculous conservative. Now, when I say that, I say it in the spirit that let me quote Dan Savage. Dan Savage says, yes, Mike Pence is awful, but he oscillates in a predictable band of Republican awfulness. So you know what you're going to get from him. Mike Pence is going to try to roll back the clock on reproductive rights, on race relations, on environmental policy, on voting rights, and on and on and on. In other words, he's a run-of-the-mill Republican. But at the very least, he's not a borderline crazy, possibly demented or pre-dementia candidate, orange, failed businessman, reality show, thin-skinned narcissist. In retrospect, I really could have put a better string of adjectives. But I think you get the idea there. So this president is not going to make it through his first term. We're going to be instead experience the Mike Pence administration. But all this is to say, when Mike Pence subsequently is roundly defeated in the next presidential election, and we find ourselves once again under new leadership, we, all of us together, are faced with a question. What now? Where do we go from here? How do we undo the damage that the Donald Trump administration has done? But really, how do we put ourselves back on path to being something like a representative democracy once again? And this being the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show, we are now going to condense a few hundred years of political, social, and economic history into about 30 seconds. Are you ready? Okay. In 18th century France, there began a movement, an intellectual, philosophical movement called the Enlightenment. And bear with me if you're familiar with all of this. I'm going to sketch the very broad outlines of this. The Enlightenment consisted of a growing body of work embracing notions like the individual rights of human beings, the rights of human beings to self-determination and representative government, the rights of human beings to embrace the world and experience the world and explain the world through rationality and through science. Now, this represents a dramatic departure from what had gone before, really through all of human history. And it set into play one of the principal dramas of the last few hundred years of Western history and of Eastern history, the conflict between lingering superstition and a rational embrace of the world. And out of this movement, out of the Enlightenment, pretty much at the high watermark of the Enlightenment, a small group of aristocrats in the British colonies, and let's be very clear, they were aristocrats, embraced these ideas and formed a representative, self-governing representative republic here in the United States, after a very bloody war of independence with the British Empire. Now, I'm eliding a whole bunch in this conversation, and I'm sure many of you will be kind enough to call up and point these things out. So let me, as I mentioned at the outset, stipulate to a few things. Now, the framers of the Constitution, as I just mentioned, were aristocrats. They created a republic, a government, a representative self-governing republic. They did not envision this for the masses. They did not envision this for women. They did not envision this for people of color. In fact, written into the very fabric of this republic was the right of one group of human beings to own and exploit the labor of another group of human beings, to keep them in abject chattel slavery. This is the original sin of our republic. This republic was designed to entrench the interests of a small aristocracy and to grant participation in the franchise pretty much only to landowning white men. There are a few exceptions here and there, but landowning white men. From there, this republic spread across the North American continent, crushing beneath its heel the indigenous populations that lived here. Now, why am I laying this out in this way? Because critics of the American experiment from the left traditionally offer up these sorts of criticisms. They say, well, the republic as it was envisioned was only for aristocratic white guys. They were the primary beneficiaries of this new system of government. People also say, yes, slavery is baked into the DNA of the United States, and we have never fully put that behind us, even to this day. Third, they say that the westward expansion of the United States was one protracted act of genocide after another. That's also true. All of these things are true. And yet, we somehow managed to bring about the greatest flowering of material success for the working and middle classes that history has ever seen. We also managed to create one of the great explosions of art and culture and technology that the world has ever seen. So what I'm saying to you, gentle listeners, is despite all of it, despite all of the baggage, despite all of the atrocities and all of the iniquities and all of the injustice and all of the oppression and all of the violence and all of the exploitation and on and on and on, there has been this thing at work in the American spirit. I can't believe I just said the American spirit when I meant to say the American experiment. Freudian slip, gentle listeners. There is this thing at work that is pushing relentlessly towards greater equality, towards greater enfranchisement, towards widening the circle of equals, towards greater inclusion, more equity, more justice, more participation, more freedom of self-expression. And that thing is irrepressible. I don't think that is ever going to go away, despite all the flaws baked into our system. This is never going to go away. And yet here we are. I think that you can explain the election of Donald Trump. In fact, I think you can explain the raison d'etre of the hardcore American right. I'm talking about the Tea Party. I'm talking about far-right evangelical Christians. I'm talking about unrepentant, unreconstructed racists. This section of the American right, I think you can explain it in terms of this irrepressible thing that I just described, this irrepressible thing continuing to grow and challenging the prerogatives and privilege of those groups of people I just described, who are overwhelmingly white and dominated by the male element within them. Overwhelmingly white, overwhelmingly male, and threatened by this irrepressible thing that the establishment of our republic set into motion. So what did that group of people do when they felt threatened? Well, for some time now, they've been trying to do their damnedest to make sure that the wrong people aren't able to vote. They are doing their damnedest to make sure that the United States maintains absolute military supremacy in the world, such that the lifestyle to which they feel entitled is able to continue. And they have chosen Donald Trump, who gave unrestrained, even gleeful expression to the frustrated id of the threatened, fragile, delicate, white male conservative base in this country. I interpret the Donald Trump presidency as the last gasp of this segment of the electorate. And frankly, it's about damn time. In fact, really the best thing that unrepentant racists could do, the best thing that hardline conservatives can do, the best thing that the Confederate flag-waving crowd can do is to grow old and die. Because really, you're in the way. You are in the way at this point. You may have elected your orange buffoon to the White House, and he may be trashing the place, but this is your last gasp, okay? This is it. You know, make sure you drain the keg before mom and dad get home, because this is it. So when you ask the question, where do we go from here? Again, I see these two competing narratives. I see this drive towards greater equality, inclusion, justice, equity, rationality against this withering entrenchment, this entitled white power structure that is slowly dwindling away. But here's what I fear. I fear that this thing in the American experiment that has been irrepressible thus far isn't going to have enough juice. And what I fear is that as the levers of the machinery of government, as the levers of government in this country have become entirely bought and paid for by the ruling elite, that the trappings of Republican government will continue. The forms will continue. We will continue to have elections. We will continue to send people to represent us at the various levels of government, all the while existing in a tiny bubble of perceived freedom, the illusion of true self-determination that is growing smaller and smaller with every passing year, until we have reached the point where all that is left are the trappings of republicanism, the symbols of representative self-government. That's all. That's all that will remain. In reality, a small group of transnational shareholders, for lack of a better term, well, I'm sure there's a better term out there, will rule us. It's quite possible that we are already there. So the question is, when we go forward, where are we going from here? How do we get there? How do we, the people of the United States of America, those of us who are dedicated to this idea that all human beings are created equal, that we are endowed with unalienable rights, how do we go forward in the face of the concentration of wealth and power that is governing world affairs right now? How do we do it? That's what I want to hear from you today. Apologies for the incredibly truncated summation of the past few hundred years of Western intellectual, social, and political history. But no apologies for my ideological bias. I want to know, where do we go from here? And how, indeed, can we do it at all? How do we get back to representative self-government that truly represents all of us? Let's go to the phones. George, good morning.
Good morning, Abe. I can't let this go by with sure. your selection of offenders to put in front of us as the people who have dominated the processes of our political system and terrorized us. They have done that, apparently, but I want to say very briefly, if you look at some of the work of radical people like Noam Chomsky, for example, his book, Who Rules the World, he will make it clear that these people are, you might call them, stage props for the massive power of capital in corporations, banks, and so on, and they dominate in ways that are not readily visible until you stop and you start asking about the various things that control our media and much of our society. And so I just want to get off the air here, but I want to say, please, please, people, don't buy this idea that a bunch of crazy half-wits are running things. They're being used. And that's all I have. Abe, you have a great show. I'll listen now, and I'm interested in your comments on this.
Yeah, thanks very much. Hey, Chomsky, appreciate the call. Chomsky is very much correct, I think. The folks that are really calling the shots in this world, the money transnational elite that I talked about, they control things in ways that we don't fully understand, that most people don't fully understand. And this is what, and I hate to reduce it to such simplistic terms, this is what must be broken if we are to forge a truly enlightened society. This is what needs to be broken, for example, if we are to collectively address climate change as a species. If we are to do to carry out the enormous amount of heavy lifting that is before us, not just as a nation, but as a society of human beings spread across this globe, there is a lot to do. And the only way that we're going to be able to do this effectively is to somehow break that ruling power structure. And as far as doing that, I really have no idea. I mean, there's armed revolution, but I hope I don't have to explain to everybody the shortcomings of that and the fact that that is most likely doomed to failure before it even gets started. We can continue, as I suggested earlier, in this sort of parade of democracy in which the trappings and the symbols of democracy are become far more meaningful than the thing itself. Or we can try a third way. We can do something like a general strike. We can do something like taking on these burdens at the local level, at the local and the state level, and at their analogous levels around the world. We can start addressing these problems right here in our communities, so that each small act of change is a pebble thrown on top of a gigantic pile. And we can aim towards some sort of collective critical mass. But it would be much easier simply to break this power structure. Much simpler in terms of accomplishing what needs to be accomplished. But of course, no power structure ever voluntarily gives up power. It just doesn't happen. So where to from here, listeners? Where to? Who's next? Ted, good morning.
Hi, Abe. Hello?
Hello.
Hi. I want to say about a general strike and that kind of action like that. I'm tired of that kind of stuff. I'm tired of marching in the streets and that kind of stuff. I think that can work if there's a single issue, like get the Brits out of India. And everyone's on board with that, and that's what you're fighting against. I think it does not work to say, I don't like this government. And I think what happens in that kind of thing is what happened in Egypt, where there were mass demonstrations, we don't like this government, but once the government's out, nobody knows what to do. So I would like to see some, where I think we should go for now, and this is a recent conclusion of mine, we need to get rid of the Democratic Party. The messages they're coming out with after this disastrous presidential election are things like tweak our message to rural voters, or recently I've heard them saying educate the rural citizens about what the Democratic Party stands for. They know what the Democratic Party stands for. And I know it's a difficult thing to say. It seems like we need the Democrats. Jill Stein was just on Amy Goodman a few minutes ago saying that the Democrats have not been able to reform in any meaningful way. I think my conclusion is they are useless. Let's get behind the Greens. Let's support single payer. Let's get a guaranteed income, which is an idea of Richard Nixon's, and let's get strong support for green energy. And let's start going to Green Party meetings and make them a significant party. That's my thought.
Interesting. Hey, thank you for the call.
Bye.
Building a an effective third party. I think that is one answer to our question. But as you mentioned, it starts in each neighborhood. It starts in each precinct. It's not enough every 4 years for lefties to get fired up and rally behind the Green Party political candidate. That's not how movements are built. That's not how political parties are established. I am all for that. I am all for something besides far-right corporate friendliness and center-right corporate friendliness that the two major parties exemplify now. I'm all for something besides that. But it's got to start on your block, in your neighborhood, in your precinct, in your city. That's where it's got to start. We need to start seeing Greens, if we're going to go with Greens as our viable third party for the sake of argument. We need to see Greens on school boards, on city councils, on county commissions, on in state legislatures, and on and on and on. That's what we need to see. It's not enough every 4 years to get on the bandwagon. So party building starts here on the street. It's also interesting, caller, that you mentioned Egypt and the power vacuum that existed after the Egyptians overthrew their government. They didn't know what to do. Egypt came out of a tradition of autocracy, out of oppressive autocracy. That's not the case here. We do know what to do. We know exactly what to do if we somehow manage to take back the machinery of power from the moneyed interests that control it. We have the forms. We have the institutions. We have a 200-year tradition of representative self-government, however flawed it may have been along the way. We understand how it works. The principles are embedded in us. They are mythologized within us. So I don't think we would go the way of Egypt if that sort of thing were to happen. And I also really, really don't want us to take a violent path towards whatever it is that awaits us next. Nobody wins if that happens. And in all likelihood would set our cause back even farther than we are now. 503-231-8187. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio program. We're ranging far and wide today on the show. It's just me with you today. Joe couldn't be here. Let's go back to the phones. Brian, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on the air.
Sure.
I am a member, a longtime member.
Thank you.
I've been a member for 25 years. I'm looking forward to the 50th anniversary. Hey, I'm a Green, and I just want to correct some stuff that you said. Greens are in those offices you talked about. Greens have been running for office for 25 mm-hmm. years. Greens are active. I had a Green Party film showing at my house this week downtown, and I invited fellow Greens and the public in to see a film called Life at the End of Empire. What a way to go. Highly, highly recommend that film for people. It's a 2011 film based on some of the works of Derek Jensen and Daniel Quinn and other folks like that. So when I hear about Greens not being in office and that we only do this thing every 4 years, that's what the corporate media says. That's what the Democrats say, Joe, and that's or not Abe, that's what you're saying. And it's from a position of not understanding or knowing because we're not covered. We're not covered in the corporate
okay,
media.
Okay, fair enough.
Okay, so I'll move on from that. One of the flaws in our thinking is that somehow if we just got back to 8 years ago, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, everything was okay.
No, everything was not okay.
Right. It's a broken system. And the part of the reason the system is broken is we have this belief that there's one right way to live. And what we all need to do is live it. Right now it's a corporate agenda. But even if it was a, you know, when in Nazi Germany, it was the Nazi agenda. Whenever anything comes to be North Korea, it's the North Korea agenda. Anytime you get a society that's like, this is the only way to be, you get freaking nuts. And really what we need and what we've known has worked is diversity. Mm-hmm. We need to come back to that we're social creatures, not economic creatures, and reinvent our lives in new ways. It's not going to be easy, and it's not going to look like anything we've ever seen. And there's no one right way to do it. So when you talk about, you know, fighting the power structure, I helped start the Green Party here in Oregon 25 years ago, and I had this belief like, wow, if we just elected the right people. Well, Google Derek Jensen and ping pong balls, and you read a little bit out of his page. He talks about the political system accepts ping pong balls and nothing else. And so if you come into that system and you're not a ping pong ball, it will eject you.
that's quite an image.
Look it up. It's a funny little story because it's the framing conditions. It's, you know, it's what it is. But the one way for us to do it is to walk away from this system, to just make it irrelevant. And I look at people out there, I sometimes look at like the Amish. Now, they aren't running the country, but they are living a life that's authentic to what they say they believe in.
Yeah.
you know, they don't sit here and rally every day, go, oh, I hate corporations, but I work for them, I shop at them, I do this, I do that, oh, I hate this, but I do that, you know, just everything different. And I'll leave it there. I do want to make one comment, and I've talked to you about this before, and that is I used to be on the board at KBOO, and I think that we need to have more rotation on talk morning shows than the people that have been there. And I have nothing against you personally, except that it does seem like a power position to have the mic, to have your issues every week brought up, because what issues aren't? And it's not just you, but it's all five time slots. And the average of those five time slots have been held by people for over 20 years. And that isn't right in a community radio station that is supposed to share diverse voices. I don't think that's the diversity. And so, you know, this is a systemic problem. Sure. Not a personal problem, but a systemic problem, and I hope it gets addressed, and I want to put it out there, because I bring it up when I get on.
Fair point. I don't want to get into the weeds of KBOO's internal governance, but that is a fair point and a legitimate one, I think.
Thank you very much.
Wait. Before you go, though, I want to ask you a question about your Green Party organizing. First, you know, thank you for that. You're doing the heavy lifting that needs to be done. But you mentioned that Greens have been elected to some of those positions I mentioned. If that's happened, I'm not aware. Have there been Greens in the state legislature, for example?
No. State legislature around the U.S., I think we've had one that was elected down in San Francisco, maybe two.
Okay.
That's not much. But across this country, we've had mayors, city councils.
Okay.
You know, in Oregon, we've got five or six people on various things, from school boards to you know. We had early in the Multnomah County 20 years ago, the Soil and Water District, a guy named Xander Patterson won.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And at the time, it was just did nothing, and he got it to be $1 million or $2 million budget and doing stuff. So when we got elected, the mayor of New Paltz, New York in 94 was the first elected official to start marrying gay people and really put that issue on the map. You never hear about that in the paper, and nobody remembers that history.
Well, I'm glad that you pointed out to us that this work is being done, and it's being done by some smart and some dedicated people. If people wanted to get involved, what should they do?
You know, I would go to the Green Party page and just put down to volunteer some way, and somebody will reach out to you. I have a different – the thing that I believe is just start a local group, get some friends together, meet. I'll come to a chapter meeting or whatever – and then figure out something to do. The thing that I think is a big flaw right now with most people is that they only think change happens through politics. So as soon as they come to a Green Party meeting, which for most people is like going to the dentist, it's about as fun as going to the dentist, they get there and then they think, well, now we put on our mental models of a political party and all they think about is campaigns and candidates. When out of the Green Party, before we had ballot access, well, we were working on it back in the early 90s when Oregon was the second most difficult state in the country to qualify a new political party on. The Green Party helped change that, by the way. We got it much lowered. Before we had a political party, we used to do all sorts of actions. Guess where Portland Cop Watch started out of? Out of here. Guess where the Bicycle Transportation Alliance started out of and made Portland the bike capital? Out of the Green Party. This is the history of the activism. There's visionary people here, and those visions die because you got to be a ping pong ball to work in the Democratic Party.
So, boy, I'm really glad we had this conversation. So your recommendation then, if people want to get involved in party building at the local level, check out the, they're called the Pacific Greens here in Oregon, correct?
Pacific Greens,
Pacific Green Party, and look for opportunities to volunteer. Are there regular meetings people can attend?
There are. There may or may not be, but I don't think meetings. I don't think we're going to get anywhere with meetings. And we need actions. And so I think the thing to do, if I was to tell somebody to get involved, and they just come to a meeting that they can get, but otherwise, start your own. There's no hierarchy here. You can start a base, have five people get together, and just figure out something to do. And start to link up.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. But for a lot of people, it's less intimidating. It's more accessible if there's, you know, a meeting that they can attend and listen and find out more opportunities about. That's what I'm
getting
at.
I have a group called Portland on Facebook, Portland Downtown Greens, that I'd like to get going and more active. And so if people join that Facebook page,
Portland Downtown Greens. All right.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks for the call. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Right.
You have a great day. Bye-bye.
You too. Now, that's what I'm talking about. That sort of thing. Coming up this morning on KBOO at 9 Alternative Radio, more from award-winning journalist Chris Hedges. We'll hear his speech, Stopping Fascism, recorded at the Aladdin Theater during his recent visit to Portland. At 10, Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. At 11, on stage and studio, James Dixon welcomes the directors of the Egg Summer Theater Academy for Portland Area High School Artists. And at 11:30, Art Focus speaks to Julia Dolan about the show representing vernacular photographs of, by, and for African Americans. All this and more coming up today on your community-supported radio station, KBOO. You know, if you're not a member of KBOO, you want to know something you can do positive, a positive action you can take right now to support a more enlightened world? You can become a member of this station. Just go to kboo.fm, click on the donate button, and become a member. It's easy, it's as inexpensive or as expensive as you want it to be, and it is a step you can take right now. All right, we're talking about where to go after the wreckage of Trump. How do we claw ourselves back to something resembling a society that works for the good of the people and for the good of the planet? It is a tall order. It is a big topic. But right now, I'm really enjoying the imagination, the thinking, and the passion of our listeners. For example, Aura writes in to say, also, you don't have to pick up the phone to call. You can write to us at the Facebook page, facebook.com/AbeandJoe, or you can send us a tweet at HonestAbe72. Aura writes into the Facebook page to say, govern yourselves. Do not participate. Do not take part in consumer culture. Raise your consciousness. Help each other. No, really help each other. Put down the phone. Pick up a book. Do you need that smoothie in a plastic cup? Reject it all. And then she adds at the end, Venus Project! Exclamation point. I'm not sure what that means, Aura, but if you want to write back or call us, let us know, please do. 503-231-8187. Before we go on with the rest of the conversation, I wanted to throw this into the mix. We're talking about alternatives, A, to violent revolution, and B, blind consumer capitulation to the industrial capitalist machine. And that is something that's come up on this show before, and something that I find myself wavering on from one side of the fence to the other, and that is holding a constitutional convention. We all venerate our Constitution. We all admire it for the forward-looking document it was at the time that it was written. We all admire it for its radical departure from all of human history that had gone before. However, we are now a 21st century society running on 18th century software. That software is the Constitution. We all know that it has been stretched and pushed and pulled and torn in so many ways over the years that it is not entirely a functional piece of software anymore. We know that it needs to be revised. We know that we need to reorient ourselves for the realities of industrial capitalism and a global society of human beings. We know that this needs to happen. We know, for example, that all mention of slavery needs to be purged from our official governing document. We know this. We know that care for the environment needs to be enshrined in our governing document. We know this. So a constitutional convention sounds like a very attractive thing. It's a chance to take care of a whole bunch of lingering problems all at once. It's a chance to guarantee voting access to everybody. It's a chance to make sure that whatever we do is done in the service of the people and of the environment. It is a chance to make sure that if you are wealthy, you are unable to buy disproportionate access to and control of the machinery of government. It's a way to get rid of a whole bunch of problems in one fell swoop. Of course, the trouble with this idea is that virtually as soon as the topic was broached and as soon as the decision was made to hold a constitutional convention, it would be hijacked by moneyed interests. There would be a big squabble over who would be sent, who would the delegates be to this new constitutional convention, whose interests would they represent. And I'm willing to bet a large stack of money that at the end of the day, you would end up in some convention hall somewhere in the United States with a whole bunch of people whose agenda aligns mysteriously with that of the moneyed ruling elite. So that's a very big question. Yes, a constitutional convention would be a wonderful and enlightened way to deal with the host of problems besetting us, but it is so vulnerable to corruption as to be nearly laughable. So I don't know if that's a viable course of action or not. I'd be very interested to hear your opinions on it. 503-231-8187. Who's next? Dougie, good morning.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
I just want to tell you how much I appreciate your show.
Thank you.
You know, yeah, and the way you started off the show, I just appreciate the optimism. You know, we're up against an authoritarian, a fascist. We're up against the corruption of Wall Street. We have the worst inequality in 100 years. We live in a country that incarcerates more people than any place in the world. And now, you know, I had been down the rabbit hole of really trying to fight this prison industrial complex. And the last 6 months or 7 months, I've really been digging in to just how bad the situation is with our climate and with climate change. And the thought or the fact that Donald Trump pulled out of the Paris Accord and basically turned his back against 97% of scientists around the planet and basically the whole world.
It's astonishing, isn't it?
It's so disgusting when you see when you see in real time. There's a great YouTube clip that I check out about every week. It's called "Climate and Extreme Weather," and then type in number 46. I think is the last one they did. But every week, the guy who put this together, he shows all the extreme weather events that are taking place in the global south. I mean, in China, unbelievable flooding, in Indonesia, in Bangladesh, in Sudan, Nigeria, in Yemen, in Somalia, people, 20 million people possibly, you know, dying from famine. All of this is, you know, contributed to from climate change. And I guess basically my thesis of what I'm trying to say is that, you know, it's been said that, you know, America is a democracy in America is so-called a work in progress.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to have to push through this voter suppression, the interstate cross-check systems, all these things. We have to make sure that everyone participates, having a 45% and 50% participation level in whenever we have these elections is unacceptable. And I think that we need to start looking at these elections in the future is that people with progressive minds such as ourselves, we have a responsibility not just to democracy in whichever state we live in or in this country, but also to the rest of the world. Because there's just outrageous amounts of suffering that we have contributed, that this country has contributed to. And the thought that Donald Trump and the Republican Party, in the name of short-term profit, would risk destroying this whole planet, it just makes me sick. But your optimism gives me hope that we have to continue. We have to continue to move forward. And if at all, if, who knows? 20, 30 years from now, we can't let these people cook the planet. And we may have to have a revolution if they won't let us have a democracy.
Hey, listen, thank you very much for the call. I appreciate your comments. And on the subject of hope and optimism, I think you have to have them. I think you have to have them because the alternative is just unacceptable. How can you live your life absent these ideas? How do you live your life absent the notion that there is a better way, there is something better out there, that we are collectively striving towards it? And there is joy in that struggle. There is hope and optimism and joy in that collective striving. I'm going to tell you the meaning of life. Aren't you glad you turned into Cabo today? Because I'm about to tell you the meaning of life. Here it is. We are on this planet for two reasons. First, to know and understand the universe better. Because to our knowledge, We are the only bits of the universe that are gifted with the ability to contemplate the rest of it. That's one of the reasons we are on this planet. The second reason we are on this planet is to know and understand what it means to be fully human. And if we pursue these two objectives, these two sides of the human coin, we will, almost by default, move inexorably towards a more enlightened, cleaner, more just, more equitable, more inclusive future for everybody. That is why we are here. That is our purpose on this earth every day. That is why Donald Trump ought to make you vomit. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Aura, who wrote to us a little while ago mentioning something called the Venus Project, wrote back to clarify that a little bit. The Venus Project. Let me see if I can bring up the page here. The Venus Project proposes an alternative vision of what the future can be if we apply what we already know in order to achieve a sustainable new world civilization. It calls for a straightforward redesign of our culture in which the age-old inadequacies of war, poverty, hunger, debt, and unnecessary human suffering are viewed not only as avoidable, but as totally unacceptable. And anything less will result in a continuation of the same catalog of problems inherent in today's world. And if you want to read more about this, you can find it at thevenusproject.com. Aura left her comments on our Facebook page, facebook.com/Abe and Joe. George also writes in to say, the Pacific Green caller should have mentioned that we have a great website, pacificgreens.org, and that there are various small chapters in the city and state that are active and people can pursue the right fit for a chapter or start a new one. We have state conventions that members and chapters at which members and chapters can come together. Please consider running for office. We need people of color to view our platform and consider consultation for a campaign. So pacificgreens.org is where you can learn more about the Green Party and hopefully more about building a third party movement. I mentioned a moment ago a constitutional convention, and I mentioned how susceptible to corruption that entire process would be, and how probably almost immediately it would be a joke. But if for some reason we are all willing to commit to a rational approach to it, I think it could be done. For example, you could write an algorithm, and by you I mean somebody who knows how to write algorithms. You could write an algorithm to select for a group of delegates to meet at the new constitutional convention and to hammer out a new constitution. You could do this. You could select for a number of things. You could make sure that we had slightly more men than women. You could select for a minimum level of education, for example. Like if you wanted everybody with a high school diploma, or everybody, you have to have at least a high school diploma, or you have to have at least a bachelor's degree, something like that. You could make sure that the delegates at the convention mapped exactly with the proportions of various racial and ethnic subgroups in the country. You can make sure that everybody was perfectly represented statistically. You could do all these things. And from that, you could cull from the general population a group of people who would then be tasked with writing a new constitution. It sounds crazy. It sounds completely nuts. But I submit to you that we'd end up with something better than we got right now. 503-231-8187. Who's next? Brian, good morning.
Hi.
Hi.
I basically have kind of a question. You said earlier, and I can't remember your whole quote, that we do know what to do. And I just, that just made me think, no, I don't know what to do. I mean, I pay attention to you. I pay attention to people that are caring people that want to make things better. And I think I have an understanding of our political system enough to know what you're saying, that we have a system that we could use, we know what to do, but we have to, it's a democracy, well, it's sort of a democracy, and we have to bring along everybody to make this happen, and I think where it falls apart is being able to talk to the other side, and it's just, I'm at an impasse. I think I'm along with a lot of other caring people that we just don't know how to talk to the other side. When somebody admits that they voted for Trump,
it's a huge roadblock, isn't it? You don't even know how to continue.
I don't know how to continue, and that's our problem. I mean, we know what to do if we're dealing with well, God, I'm trying to think of a good way to say it. We're dealing with caring, sympathetic people, but the people that the other side, you're just a brick wall, and so you kind of know what to do, but you can't get there because you just, how can you do it without communicating and seeing eye to eye with the other side?
That's a very good point. And I suspect, unfortunately, that it's going to take a significant worsening of conditions to bring the other side closer to our side. And I hate being this reductive and this binary about it, but you make a very good point. How do you talk to somebody who wears a Confederate flag on their shirt?
I keep feeling like a lot of other people, that there's got to be a way. There's got to be, you know, and then along comes a book a few years ago. It was something like The Republican Mind. I can't remember the name of the book, but it was like saying that they're not coming around. They're not going to, it's just a different mindset. So that doesn't make me feel hopeful.
No.
And then the other thing that I wanted to ask the person calling from the Green Party, I was involved with the Green Party in Alaska many, many years ago. But when he's saying, are you and him, were you saying that if we want to see improvement, that we should just join a third party and forget about the Democratic Party? Or do you still think that it's a valid approach to try to get into the Democratic Party and change it from the bottom up? You know, I would have thought that if it couldn't happen with the energy of Bernie and trying to get Ellison into the DNC, if that didn't happen, then just write it off. But should I feel like just write it off and go with Greens? Or should some people still try to infiltrate and get a Democratic wing of the Democratic Party?
Thank you very much for the call. That's a very good question. A lot of people are done with the Democrats. We had a caller earlier who said that they were absolutely done with the Democrats. I'm largely done with the Democrats, too, because at the national level and at the state level, too, less so here in Oregon, but very much so in many other states. They're very much in the pockets of the same people who have Republicans in their pockets. But in the end, I don't really care if there's some sort of internal revolution within the Democratic Party that makes them into the strong progressive force that arguably they once were and that they need to be again. I'm fine with that. I'm fine if the Democrats are the vehicle for that. But I'm also fine, and I encourage third party building. And here's what I think really will probably happen if some sort of reformation like this is to happen. I think it'll be both at once. We will see third party building at the local and state level, like we've been talking about on this program. But at the same time, until that is able to trickle up, as it were, until we start putting Greens into the House of Representatives, into the Senate, into governorships around the country, and maybe even into the presidency, until that happens, I think the Democratic Party still needs to be the instrument of progressives. And I say that fully cognizant of all the flaws that permeate the Democratic Party at the national level. The success of Bernie Sanders is evidence of a couple things. It's evidence, first of all, that there is that flexibility still there within the Democratic Party. There still is that ability to change in a progressive direction. And it shows, more importantly, it also shows that there is a hunger for that kind of change. So I suspect that while third party building is happening at the local level, progressives can act through the Democrats at a national level, albeit perhaps not as effectively or as immediately as we might like. 503-231-8187. Doug, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for backing off on your pessimism a little bit about the Constitutional Convention. I feel strongly that it is the myriad of efforts being made by so many good human beings that is our way through this. Would you comment a little bit on your earlier comment that you see our revolution as doomed from the outset or something like that?
Certainly, and thanks very much for the call. What I meant by that is I think there are people who hold out hope or maybe who have given up hope at the same time and believe that a violent revolution is the only way, that we've got to clear the bastards out. That we need some sort of violent political and social and economic cataclysm akin to the French Revolution in which we sweep out all of the bad and put in something else. Now, I don't want to go into the very many ways in which the French Revolution failed to do that, but I think there is that attitude here in the United States, particularly among many on the left. And I think it's an attitude that animates at least some of the people who comprise the Antifa movement, the people who believed that effecting change through existing democratic institutions is ineffective, that it's not going to happen, that it's doomed, that the only way is to fight back against the power of the state. I think that is a fool's errand. You know, the spirit of the Second Amendment, and I don't want to get derailed into a Second Amendment conversation here, but the spirit of the Second Amendment is the right of the people to arm themselves, not only to protect their, you know, their farmsteads in the early days of the Republic, but also to take up arms against the government if it were to become tyrannical. I mean, that is part of our national mythology, the right of a people to overthrow a tyrannical government. But I submit to you that that would be a fool's errand today, that our government is so heavily armed that there would be no hope, no hope of a violent revolution succeeding. And even if it were, let's say for the sake of argument, that enough people got on board with that and there was this protracted civil war in the United States, sort of a guerrilla action of the many armed populace against the heavily armed government, that that would result in such accumulated collateral and direct damage as to ruin our society and render it effectively inoperable. I don't think anybody wants to go there. Armed revolution is a short trip to chaos and collapse. I don't think we want to go there. That's what I mean by that. Timothy writes in to the Facebook page, facebook.com/AbeJoe, to say, "Thanks for the show. When we attend that constitutional convention, we'll need to have a lot of innovative ideas in hand, including an economic system to replace capitalism. I refer you to copiosis.com. That's copiosis.com. Copiosis is an attempt to design a free market mode of exchange which can effectively replace the corporately controlled system that we currently have. It relies on a mode of exchange which quantifies the net benefit of any product or activity rather than its tradability. That value is determined by an all-volunteer public organization to which membership is available to anyone. There are pilot projects currently testing the system on the ground. This is a vast oversimplification of a very well thought out proposition. But the point is to have alternatives tested and ready when crisis inevitably shifts power. The means are the end." That is fascinating. That is worthy of a show in and of itself. Thank you for that, Timothy. I'm going to have to, I think I'm going to have to look into this. Copiosis.com. 503-231-8187. Todd, good morning.
Hey, how you doing?
Very well. How are you?
Good. Thanks. So I just was going to say, like, two things you mentioned when you started. Like, I'm originally from Alabama, and you're talking about getting rid of, like, the Confederate flags, like, when they die off, basically.
Yeah.
So, like,
that was perhaps not very charitable of me.
Do I know?
I said that was perhaps not very charitable of me. Go ahead.
No, but, like, I've had that thought, too, when I was younger, but me growing up there, growing up in that, like, setting, I've seen that, and it's still there. Like, it's not going away is what I'm getting at. Like, it's sad. I don't want that, but I had the same thought at one point.
Well, but, you know, yeah. Demographically, maybe it is going away. I mean, within a couple of decades, the exact date escapes me, but pretty soon we're not going to be a white-majority country anymore.
That is true, but, like, I'm just saying, like, me, when I was, I'm 31 now, like, when I first had that thought, like, the people are hanging around me, I was like, oh, they're going to be different when I get older. But no.
Like, no.
I've met good and bad on both spectrums.
Yeah,
and
you're right about that.
Just in life in general, it's always going to be around.
Yep.
But the second thing you said, too, and I actually had this realization last night, that we actually have a president that was from a reality TV show. That finally hit me the other day. I was like,
yeah.
It's just crazy to think that that's someone that runs everything.
crazy is a good word to describe it. Yeah.
Like, hey, listen, we're on the real world now.
Exactly. Hey, thank you very much for the call. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks.
All right. This has been a rather interesting show, and I wish that we weren't running out of time here. Do we have time for one more phone call, Ray? Oh, no, I guess we don't. Listen, thank you, everybody, for calling in today. This is really too big of a topic to tackle in 1 hour, but it's one that's been on my mind, and I hope that it will be on your minds as well. We have within our grasp the means to make things better. It is not too late. We just have to act in the correct way. We have to figure that out, and we have to do it. So I'm interested in continuing this conversation with you on future shows. We'll be back at you next week. Thanks for tuning in. This has been the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show on your listener-supported radio station, KBOO.
It's coming from the field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay, democracy.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Playing Monopoly with God and Other True Stories on August 4th, 7 p.m. at the Old Church in Portland. Playing Monopoly with God and Other True Stories will be performed by Melissa Bangs, who studied with the Upright Citizens Brigade. This is her one-woman comedy show about postpartum psychosis and healing through shared moments, laughter, and tears. Again, that's Playing Monopoly with God and Other True Stories on August 4th, 7 p.m. at the Old Church, 1422 Southwest 11th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Coonerin's Electric Fin Band, Thursday, August 10th at 8 p.m. at the White Owl Social Club in Portland. Coonerin's Electric Fin Band and 1939 Ensemble perform Thai Psychedelia and are part of the Pickathon-sponsored White Owl Social Club's Outdoor Summer Concert Series. Again, that's the Coonerin's Electric Fin Band and 1939 Ensemble on Thursday, August 10th at 8 p.m. at White Owl Social Club, 1305 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.